Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. You are last oral argument for the day. Your panel is to my right, Justice Sue Walker, to my left, Justice Lee Gabriel. I'm Leanne Dofano, and I understand both sides are ready, so Megan, if you'll call the case, please.
May it please the court, Mr. Brent Bowen to argue for appellant and Mr. John Bacon to argue for the state.
May it please the court. Okay, I was waiting for the green light, sorry.
It'll come on when you start talking.
Okay.
It gives you more time.
To uphold the lower court would allow police to financially benefit from police misconduct. This case is about jurisdiction, and it's about the good faith exception. Jurisdiction. Under Local Government Code 314.003, which is applicable in this case, deals with home rule police forces. In that statute, it only provides that a home rule jurisdiction may provide for a police force. In contrast, 314.001 of the Local Government Code states that a type A municipality can provide for a police force and goes on to enumerate the powers of a type A municipality. As such, under statutory construction, since there's no guidance for home rule jurisdictions, home rule jurisdiction ends at the city limits. This Court of Criminal Appeals in Kurtz said that a home rule jurisdiction does not have police powers outside of their municipal boundaries. Now, the legislature did go on to overturn that regarding DWI cases, but I believe it's still good law that under home rule jurisdiction, the police officer's powers end where the city limits end. And the lower court in this case found just that. They found that there was the jurisdiction, they were the police officers of the Carrollton Police Department were outside their jurisdiction in executing the search warrant. However, the lower court found that there was a good faith exception.
But was the other police force present?
There was no other police force present. At the motion to suppress, the appellee in this case, appellant in this case, offered up the discovery with no objections to the court. In that discovery, it was asked, name all officers who were present at the locations in this case. Now, just to be a little confusing, the locations we're discussing in this case are really going to be the Archer Street address. And in the appellee's response, only Carrollton Police Department were present. The only hint at the suppression hearing, there was no evidence presented whatsoever that anyone other than the Carrollton Police Department was there. In contrast, at the hearing on the merits, a civilian testified that he believed, which is at the Freeman Street address, separate address. We don't have standing to even argue that case or argue that search. My client only, the appellant was only had interest in the Malone and the Archer Street address. But the civilian, the Freeman, said he thought there was possibly an officer present. But there was no testimony at any point in time that Carrollton Police Department, the Colony Police Department, or the Sheriff's Department was present. Because to find so, the lower court would have had to say, well, the Colony was present, therefore I don't need to find the good faith exception. So no, there was no one other than the Carrollton Police Department was present. And I think if you do a diligent search or some cases in the 80s that talk about execution of search warrants, and the Court of Criminal Appeals didn't even have to address whether or not someone's outside of jurisdiction because they brought local law enforcement. So again, the lower court found that they did not have jurisdiction, they were acting outside their jurisdiction, and as such, to cure it, the court sua sponte found the good faith exception. Now, first off, one question sometimes arises, is the exclusionary rule apply? And this court has previously found under $2,067 and three handguns that illegal evidence is not admissible in a forfeiture case. Therefore, we would argue that the exclusionary rule does apply. And the exclusionary rule is there to deter police misconduct. and should be applied liberally, I believe, in these civil cases. Here we're talking about a civil forfeiture case. We're not talking about a criminal case. And so, again, to allow the good faith exception would be to allow the police officers to financially gain from their own misconduct. The good faith exception was created by the Supreme Court, obviously, to cure clerical errors when a police officer is executing a search warrant in good faith. If you look at 3823B of the Code of Criminal Procedure, it talks about the good faith exception under the Code of Criminal Procedure in Texas, where an officer's good faith relying on that magistrate. Well, first off, there was no evidence presented at the lower court as to what the officers may or may not have been relying on. They didn't come in and say, hey, we relied on this magistrate, saying to a peace officer. But the officers acted outside their jurisdiction. The officer's actions are what caused the illegal activity or the misconduct occurred. There was nothing on the magistrate. There was nothing on the clerk. It relies solely on the shoulders of law enforcement. The exclusionary rule is there to deter that police misconduct, which is why the exclusionary rule should be applied in this case, and there should not be a good faith exception. To allow a good faith exception, you're basically saying to the police, it's okay to bend that rule to benefits financially. Because again, we're talking here financial gain.
So it's okay to bend the rule and send somebody to prison, but it's not okay to bend the rule to benefit financially?
I don't think it's okay to bend the rules ever. But to find the good faith exception here says, the police know there's $1 million sitting on a coffee table. We've got probable cause. We might be able to claim exigent circumstances. We don't need to go get that warrant because we're going to claim exigent circumstances. And then the court at the trial court may find, hey guys, yeah, the exclusionary rule applies to the money, but then go down to civil court, maybe it doesn't. In this case, the state dismissed the only case that we could bring a motion to suppress in the criminal court. The state dismissed that case, so we weren't able to bring a motion to suppress in the criminal courts to see what the criminal court said. We were only left then with the civil court to argue this case
and argue. Dismissed the underlying criminal case?
There was one underlying criminal case. I think it's important to note the money we're talking about here today, the $23,000, no drugs were found with that money. So on that case, because no drugs were found with it, and you're arguing possession of drugs, there's no grounds to argue motion to suppress in that case. So there was a separate misdemeanor case that arose out of the Malone Street address. A motion to suppress was done, and the court and the district attorney's office dismissed that case. So we could not argue the motion to suppress at the criminal case. Because there was some argument, why didn't the appellant bring the motion to suppress at the trial court when we didn't have any grounds or opportunity to do that in front of the judge? I think that, again, the major point here is looking at the good faith exception. The good faith exception is there to allow some evidence into before the court that is not tainted by any police misconduct, such as a clerical error. There's a recent Supreme Court case that talks about, I think it's U.S. v. Herring, where the clerk forgot to take out a warrant out of the system and that police officer relied on that warrant. The good faith exception should apply, and the exclusionary rule should not be applied in that case.
Excuse me.
But here we don't have any misconduct other than the actors of Carrollton Police Department. Carrollton Police Department would assume that they have jurisdiction throughout Denton County, throughout Collin County, and throughout Dallas County because their municipality borders all three of those counties. The lower court said, no, you don't. You only have jurisdiction within your city limits. So they're then relying, I guess, on a mistake of law. But to allow a police officer to not know the law but still be able to benefit financially, I think goes against the exclusionary rule and the good faith exception.
What about the line of cases that say city police do have jurisdiction?
The only cases that talk about that fail to look at Local Government Code 341.003, The appellant in those cases failed to bring up, hey, we have a statute that specifically says, .001, hey, here's type A municipalities, you have countywide jurisdiction. This court found in Brother, county type A municipalities, Bedford PD's type A, you get countywide jurisdiction. But if you look at Kurtz, which talked about home rule, which is a court of criminal appeals case, they said you don't have countywide jurisdiction. You only have citywide jurisdiction.
Did you cite that case in your brief?
I believe I did, yes, ma'am. It is. I have the cite here, Judge. It is 152 Southwest 3rd, 72. And, in fact, the court of criminal appeals went on in that case to talk about, in dicta, and I'm going to tell the court it is dicta, but to look at, if you say that a police department has countywide jurisdiction in towns such as Louisville, Carrollton, Fort Worth, they cover multi-county jurisdictions. So would DeSoto in South Dallas County, or would Fort Worth in South Denton County, would they want Carrollton coming into their backyard and executing a search warrant? I think there's a safety issue with police. If you've got police from some other part of a county that maybe touches coming into to some other town to execute a search warrant without any local law enforcement involvement, I think that raises a safety issue for those officers and for the citizens involved. You know, if you're in Sanger, Texas, which is in Denton County, and Carrollton PD comes knocking on your door with a search warrant, and there's no Sanger Police or Sheriff's Department there to assist, you might question the authority of that officer, which is why the Supreme Court or the Court of Criminal Appeals in prior cases has said, listen, if you bring local law enforcement, you're okay. But if you don't, there's not a case on point that I could find where someone didn't bring local law enforcement. There's no case out there that I could find that says, hey, if you don't bring local law enforcement, you don't, you lose. There's not one out there. I wish there was. Which is kind of why this is kind of a case of first impression, because this is one of those cases where Carrollton didn't use due diligence in bringing over the colony or the sheriff's department or the Texas Rangers or DPS to execute that warrant. They did it solely on their own behalf. It was their own actions. When you talk about the good faith exception, you'd have to say they relied on something. Well, one, we don't know what they relied on. We don't know what those officers relied on. There was no testimony presented at the motion to suppress at the lower court as to what they may have relied on. The court inferred that they relied on just the face of the warrant. That was an inference by the lower court that says to a peace officer. We would argue the peace officer or police officer is only a police officer within their own municipality, that municipality which grants them the power to be a police officer. Now, Chapter 14 in the Code of Criminal Procedure does allow when you're outside your jurisdictions for a warrantless arrest, but there's nothing under Code of Criminal Procedure, Chapter 18, that says a police officer, if you're a police officer, you can go wherever you want within the state of Texas to execute a search warrant.
The justification for the warrantless arrest is that any citizen can make a citizen's arrest. Therefore, a police officer is not more limited than an individual citizen, as I recall the case law.
That's correct. But at the same time,
a citizen cannot walk into somebody's house and search somebody's house. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. But I think the case law all stems, when you talk about jurisdiction, the only case law we have for guidance under jurisdiction is warrantless. We don't have any cases that I could find that says, hey, if you have a search warrant and you don't have jurisdiction to be in that municipality, then whether or not that affects the validity of the search.
Well, even this court tells you Rick versus State that typically have countywide jurisdiction to execute warrants, including search warrants.
But I think, again, in Britt, the appellant failed to recognize or bring up the local government code, which expressly says no. And then I think that along with Kurtz, I mean, under statutory, to say in Britt, and I think, again, Britt somewhat predates, I believe, this local government code that says home rule jurisdiction. And I think the attorneys in that case should have brought it up. They didn't. I don't know why they didn't do that. But I think if you look at local government code, where it specifically says under, point one, type A general rule, you have all these enumerated powers, and even says in that statute, subsection F, a police officer may serve in each county in which the municipality is located all process issued by municipal court. It says that in 341.001 for a type A general rule municipality. But if you skip over to 3.003, all it says is a home rule municipality may provide for a police force. So it doesn't say, hey, go back up to 341.001.
It doesn't say that you can't do that.
But then you'd be adding language into the statute that's just not there. And I think that you would have to, the legislature didn't give them those powers. They specifically changed and provided what police powers have in type A, what powers police have in type B, C, and what powers police have in home rule, and it doesn't give them those powers. So by common law, it would end at the city limits. And in Britt, I don't know what type of municipality that town was, that they were home rule type A. I don't know. But in Kurtz, the court says for warrantless arrest, officers, your authority ends at the city limits.
Do you know how many home rule municipalities are in Denton County?
I do not.
Do you know if there's a population limitation for a home rule municipality?
There is not. Unfortunately, it's not. It's civil municipal law is not something I know a whole lot about. My limited understanding of home rule jurisdiction is allows the city to do some different things and regulate some possible different things, and they don't have to jump through as many hoops for the state if they choose to be a home rule versus type A. Thank you.
May it please the court.
I am John Biggins. I am an assistant district attorney with the Denton County DA's Office Civil Division, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee state of Texas. My opponent says that this case is about police misconduct, jurisdiction, and the good faith exception. I would argue that this case is about a drug dealer and his money.
Well, we're not a jury, so really we're just interested in the law.
Thank you, Judge. Basically, what we did in this case, Your Honor, is I'm going to give you guys a little brief overview of the facts so you can understand the law a little bit as I distinguish what my opponent has stated so far. Basically, Your Honor, in this case, the state of Texas presented three credible witnesses. Mai Tran, she's an officer of the Carrollton PD. Officer Jeremy Sanchez, he's a K-9 officer with the Carrollton PD. James Savoldi, which was a good friend of the appellant, Brendan Roberts. And basically, in this case, the Carrollton PD obtained three search warrants to search three residences in the Colony, Texas. Okay, we know Carrollton and the Colony are neighboring cities. To obtain those warrants, she had to fill out an affidavit. That affidavit was supported by probable cause. We did have a suppression hearing. The appellant filed a motion to suppress. We had a hearing, and the judge denied that motion to suppress. The judge did not, in fact, find that the Carrollton PD acted outside their jurisdiction. If you'll look at the clerk's record, you will see that the judge denied the suppression motion in total. There was no limiting or anything of that nature. Basically, the appellant argued, I guess that we didn't have probable cause or the officers acted outside their jurisdiction, and the judge denied that on both counts.
In looking at the findings of fact, I don't see a finding or a conclusion of law where the judge found that they acted outside their jurisdiction. Is that in there? Because I would have assumed that was in there from what Mr. Bowen argued.
It is not in there, Judge, because the judge found the exact opposite. He found that they acted within their jurisdiction, and that's why he awarded us the money.
Well, I don't see that in there either. Is that in there?
Judge, I believe... I can.
He just found that they executed the warrants and that the warrants were based on probable cause and that they were facially valid warrants and that they served them and that they acted in good faith.
Right.
That was that finding.
Right. There is no finding that they acted outside their jurisdiction, which is what the appellant stated at the outset of his argument. I'm saying that is not in there.
I think that the argument that he's making is that the finding that they acted in good faith necessarily
acting outside their jurisdiction, or else there would be no need for to apply the good faith exception?
I think the judge, it's my understanding that the judge did an either or. Either they were acting within the scope of their jurisdiction, or if they were not, then the good faith exception applies. That was my understanding of the ruling, Your Honor.
Good faith as to what?
Good faith, basically, these three search warrants.
I understand the facts, but
yeah.
Good faith as to what?
Good faith as to the that the officer, Mitran of the Carrollton PD, she went to the magistrate, okay, and
she thought she was in Carrollton, or
the magistrate is in Carrollton, but it has jurisdiction in Dallas County and Denton County, okay, and so this officer went to the magistrate in Carrollton in her city, okay, and that magistrate has countywide jurisdiction in Denton and Dallas County, and she presented these facts to the magistrate, and the magistrate issued those warrants. That was a command for this officer. It even states on the face of the warrant, it identifies.
Good faith as to the fact that she thought she was in Carrollton, or good faith as to whether she thought that she could go outside her city?
Good faith that she could go outside the Carrollton city limits as long as she remained in Denton County. Yes.
Is that what good faith means?
Good faith basically means that, you know, that there is an objective, reasonable basis that you act, that you don't act without total authority. This officer had a warrant. He had a court order to go execute this warrant. And she was identified on the face of the warrant as a peace officer of the state of Texas with the authority to execute that warrant. That's what I'm saying. That's where the good faith comes in, Your Honor. Basically, in this case, he brings up four points of error, one of them being the sufficiency of the evidence. And if you'll look, Your Honor, that in this case, not only did we have three warrants supported by probable cause, okay, we also had a situation where there was an underlying case. The underlying criminal case was that the appellant, Brenda Roberts, possessed marijuana greater than 4 ounces, less than 5 pounds, on March 22, 2007. That was the date that the initial execution of the search warrant occurred. Okay, Your Honor, he pled guilty to that. We admitted that in evidence, so that is the underlying case. We also, at the trial court level, proved up an uncharged offense. In asset forfeiture cases, you're allowed to prove up uncharged offenses. Let's say the criminal side of our office, the intake attorney, only chose to charge him with possession of marijuana. I, at the trial court level, also proved up the fact that he also committed the offense of delivery of a marijuana. He, in an effort to avoid his drugs being found by police, because he had a hunch that they were coming over to execute a warrant at his residence, he took 2 pounds of marijuana to his best buddy, James Savoldi. Okay, James Savoldi testified at trial to that effect. When this appellant gave him that marijuana, that was delivery. That was over a quarter ounce.
We've read the facts.
Okay, and I want the court to understand, if you listen to appellant, we don't have anything without the drug sniff, and that's not true. We also proved up to the fact that this appellant had a prior conviction for manufacture or delivery of controlled substance. The trial court heard that as well. So there was overwhelming evidence. Not only did the dog alert on the money, which suggests pursuant to the case law that it was in close proximity to the drugs.
For the drugs. So what ties that specific money to any drugs other than the sniffing?
If you'll look at the case law, Your Honor.
I'm asking you about this case.
Okay. I understand. What ties the money to the drugs in this case is the appellant's actions. Okay. Why did he try to hide the marijuana from the police? Because it represented illegal activity. Why would he hide the money from police? It's my argument that it's represented illegal activity.
What is the evidence?
I understand. The evidence is the fact that there was an odor of marijuana on it, okay, that it was tied with hair ties consistent with drug activity.
Wait. Tied with hair ties.
Yes. Yes, it was freestanding money. It wasn't in envelopes, let's say, that you would find in a bank. You know, a bank gives you $23,000. You would think that it would be in some kind of envelope. It was with hair ties consistent with drug activities, like things that you would tie up something for quick counting to be able to leaf through it. That's what I'm saying. Also, in addition to that, Your Honor, not only do we have the guilty mind, of that, but this was a investigation. The officers received a tip that this guy was dealing marijuana and alprazolam, okay? So they go to the initial address where he was living with his girlfriend. They find the alprazolam in his bedroom, okay? Then they get a tip that, hey, this guy moved the money and the drugs, okay? And that the drugs are with his friend, James Savoli. So they get a warrant, they go to Savoli, and he says, yes, in fact, the appellant did give me the drugs, okay? And then from that, they go to the Archer address because they get a tip that this guy, you know, took the money to his parents' house. So this was accumulation. If you look at it, this was not just one thing. We're not just relying totally on the dog sniff. We're relying on the totality of the circumstances and saying that there was more than a sufficient evidence that this money represented drug proceeds. And that's why we're here today, Your Honor. Basically, this is a situation. If the guy didn't do it, why did he plead guilty and spend 180 days in jail? We put that in front of the court, and there was no evidence. What is key is that in cases where they find that the evidence is not sufficient, the case law that I've seen, you always see a situation where there's some legitimization of the money. There was no legitimization of the money. The appellant was not employed. No basis to account for $23,000.
Didn't the brother say he had no idea the money was there?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Nobody claimed the money except the appellant. The money was hidden under the appellant's brother's bed. Okay, and the brother did not know anything about the money.
And the parents didn't know where the money came from.
Correct. Nobody came forward and said they knew.
The appellant said, that's my money?
Yes, in his answer. He asked for the return of his money.
Plus, he also said in a phone conversation, I think from the jail, I took the money and hid it under my brother's bed.
Wouldn't that be what ties it to the money? I mean, to the...
That did not come out in evidence in the case in chief.
Well,
that
did through the search warrant, which
yes.
Was unobjected to. And
yes.
Once it comes in,
yes.
It's unobjected to hearsay. It's evidence of
yes.
The substantive fact itself.
Yes, it did come in during the search warrant. Yes, Your Honor. There, and again, appellant cites that there's no case law on point. He gives you Kurtz. Kurtz is totally... is off point. The controlling case in this case is Britt v. State, Your Honor. This very court had to deal with the issue, city police officers executing search warrants outside their city, but in the county where the city resides. That case dealt with Arlington and Kennedale, and is right on point and very much analogous to our situation, Your Honor. No, it doesn't. This case, Britt v. State, was decided after the local government code, which was enacted, that appellant wants to continue to bring up. Okay, this case was decided in 89. I believe the local government code was enacted in 1987. The local government code is dealing with a whole different mission. When this court decided this case, there's a reality in that drug dealers, while they might operate within a county, I mean, people who want their drugs want them close, okay? So that drug dealer is going to operate within that county, but we're talking about a situation where Louisville and Flower Mound might be, where the drug buyer gets his drugs or the drug dealer makes his sale. We could be talking about a half a mile, and so I believe that that, you know, the court recognized this reality in allowing city police officers to have countywide jurisdiction. This is not.
Can't allow anything the law doesn't allow.
I understand.
His argument was that home rule cities do not, police officers do not have countywide jurisdiction. Is there any case law that contradicts his position?
Yes, Your Honor, and I cited not only Britt v. State in my argument, but I also cited Angel v. State and Fifth District Court Landrum v. State, Your Honor, that is all consistent with that holding. I would argue that the officers, they acted within their jurisdiction. Everything that they did was proper. If you look even in the probable cause affidavit, they were in communication with the Colony PD. Officer Tran got confirmation from Officer Lambert with the Colony PD that, yes, in fact, Brandon Roberts is known for drug trafficking, or I've received information that he's known for drug trafficking. And, yes, his parents do live on the Archer address. So there was communication. It wasn't just happenstance that the Colony PD showed up at the execution of the warrant on Freeman Street. That wasn't happenstance, Your Honor. That was because the two agencies were working hand-in-hand sharing information. James Savoli, the witness that we brought, he testified that the Colony PD showed up at his residence, that they were there while the Carrollton PD executed the warrant. That's what he testified to, Your Honor.
But that wasn't where the money was found.
Right, but what I'm saying is that there was a process. Okay, it went from Malone to Freeman to Archer. All the time, the agencies were in communication, Carrollton PD and the Colony. And so I'm saying that Carrollton,
in the record,
the Colony, yes, that.
And the Colony, but the Colony wasn't on Archer Street.
That's correct. No, not. It didn't come out in testimony that they were. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
The appellee wants you to look at the fact that Mr. Roberts was a bad person, and therefore it's okay to take his money even if the officers did act outside their jurisdiction. Mia Tran, the officer in charge of this case, never, ever, ever testified that the Colony Police Department was there at the Malone Street address or was there at the Archer Street address. That is a key piece of information. Mia Tran, the lead officer, didn't testify. But you have State once argued a civilian said, I think I saw, if you look at the record, I think I saw the Colony in the alleyway. Much of, I think if you look at the record, what evidence was presented at the hearing or the trial, the appellee created the finding of facts and conclusions of law. And I want to point out conclusion of law number 2, the city of Carrollton is in Denton County and Dallas County. The Carrollton Police Department acted in good faith when relying upon said warrant, which authorized and commanded them to execute the same at 3 residence addresses in the Colony, pursuant to 1804, 1806 Code of Criminal Procedure. If the judge didn't need to make a finding of fact conclusion of law that the officers acted in good faith, then, I mean, he should have just said there's jurisdiction. The appellee did a poor job in drafting the finding of facts and conclusions of law for the court, because the appellee drafted them. And should we have objected at the lower court and asked for a better, more refined? Probably. But we're stuck with the finding of facts and conclusions of law at this point before this court. And it clearly says good faith found good faith. And again, why would the lower court, need to find good faith if it wasn't for the officers not having jurisdiction? There was no need to.
We don't know that.
We don't. But I think the finding of what.
Did anyone object to the trial judge about under the local government code, the home rule versus.
Those were all introduced at the suppression hearing. That was the crux of the state's of the appellant's case at the motion to suppress, was that look at the local government code, look at Kurtz. The court, in the playful banter with appellant, said, well, there should be a common law good faith exception. I'm going to find for common law good faith exception. If you look at the record, there's a, or they talked about a common law good faith exception. So in the finding of facts, it says find a good faith exception. I don't think that's a huge leap for the court to make those to say, hey, there's, for this court to make the finding that there was no jurisdiction, the lower court find that. But even if you don't make the leap, then we would argue that there is no jurisdiction. I mean, I think we put that in our brief that, hey, the good faith doesn't apply. Jurisdiction is not there because if you look at the statute, it does not provide for a county to have citywide, or for a city, unless you're type A, to have countywide jurisdiction.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
You said in your initial argument that the rule that home rule city jurisdiction ends at the city limits had been overturned as the DWI, but not as to their general power. And I'm saying if it has been overruled, which case is that overruled it as to DWI? And if it's been overruled as to DWI, why it seems less intrusive to have it be overruled when they take the time to go get a valid warrant?
It was It was overruled by statute. They changed the statute to include DWIs for warrantless arrests outside the officer's jurisdiction. So that when I say it's overruled, that's what I'm referring to. The legislature came back. But at the time that this case this arrest was made, it was prior to the enactment of the amendment of the statute.
Wasn't that based on the fact that most times when there were arrests outside the city limits, the officers were in hot pursuit, and they were having to stop at the city limits in their pursuit, and in some of the discussion in legislative history had to do with the fact that officers shouldn't have to stop at their city limits if they're in hot pursuit of the suspect?
Yeah, I think the statute expanded that hot pursuit doctrine to say, hey, if you're pursuing DWI, we're going to say it's okay to go outside your jurisdiction. The state wants to say the appellee wants to say on its face that the search warrant said to any peace officer. So they could say, well, if Arlington PD showed up in Denton County, which has no authority in Denton County, to go get a search warrant, it says it to any peace officer. I'm a peace officer. City of Arlington holds my commission. I can go up to Sanger or Aubrey or wherever in Denton County to execute that warrant. It doesn't make sense for a plain reading of, hey, it says to a peace officer. You have to have jurisdiction within that county, within that location, and to find that the good faith exception again applies would say that the police again can benefit from their own misconduct, because the lower court, I would say to this court, by finding the good faith exception and applying the good faith exception, found that something was fishy, that they didn't have jurisdiction, but will cure it. Please don't let the police benefit financially. They knew they should have gotten local police authority to help. It's not a mistake. It's a rogue police force. Thank you.
All right. We appreciate your argument, and your case is submitted. Appreciate you coming all the way down here to argue. I know it's not a fun drive. We've heard that it's not a fun drive.
Go home now.
Yes, we will.
So you are excused to try to get on that highway before everybody else does, and this court will be adjourned.
Thank you, judges.
All right.